We're going to turn to the book of Ruth at chapter 1. Ruth chapter 1, and we're going to read verses 6 to 17. Hear the word of God. Sometime later, Naomi heard that the Lord had blessed his people by giving them a good harvest. So she got ready to leave Moab with her daughters-in-law. They started out together to go back to Judah, but on the way she said to them, "Go back home and stay with your mothers. May the Lord be as good to you as you have been to me and to those who have died. And may the Lord make it possible for each of you to marry again and have a home." So Naomi kissed them goodbye, but they started crying and said to her, "No, we will go with you to your people." "You must go back, my daughters," Naomi said. "Why do you want to come with me? Do you think I could have sons again for you to marry? Go back home, for I am too old to get married again. Even if I thought there was still hope, and so got married tonight and had sons, would you wait until they had grown up? Would this keep you from marrying someone else?" "No, my daughters, you know that's impossible. The Lord has turned against me, and I feel very sorry for you." Again they started crying. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye and went back home, but Ruth held on to her. So Naomi said to her, "Ruth, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her God. Go back home with her." But Ruth answered, "Don't ask me to leave you. Let me go with you. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and that is where I will be buried. May the Lord's worst punishment come upon me if I let anything but death separate me from you." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, to begin with, Elimelech, Naomi, and sons Mahlon and Chilion had moved to Moab because of famine. We join the story with Naomi having already lost her husband and her sons. When we start in chapter 1, we have a picture of Naomi and her two daughters-in-law being close and getting on extremely well together. But initially, that could not have been the case, as they were from different areas, different backgrounds, and so on. Now, if you think of some of your neighbours, I'm sure we all have one like this. We like a nice bit of quiet, gentle music. They like something that's harsh and noisy. We have a rule that if something's on, we will stop at midnight, mindful of other people in the building. But they're happy to carry on. They'll go on to 2 or 3 the next morning without a care. And while we are mindful of the neighbour who has come off the night shift, and the wee old lady at 98 who sleeps until 10 o'clock in the morning, the neighbour clatters around, slams doors, and doesn't bother at all. Now, even telling you that, I can feel a sense of irritation. So Naomi wouldn't cope with that kind of irritation, but there would be irritation to cope with, differences to deal with. She would have to cope with different language, customs, and faith, as Ruth and Orpah were from Moab. Naomi has to accept that both of her sons married Moabite women. So we can appreciate that differences can lead to, at best, irritation, and at worst, confrontation. We see from Ruth 1 that they had overcome their differences and difficulties. Now, in the story, there are two main characters, Naomi and Ruth. So what kind of people were they? Naomi had suffered a great deal. She has moved to Moab because of famine. And I personally know that feeling of having to move somewhere. So while I was thinking about this story, I thought, what did I feel when I was made to move to Partick Trinity? Now, it's not as serious as having to run away from famine. I wasn't being chased by famine. I was being chased by Glasgow Presbytery. But what were the feelings? Was it resentment? No. It was fear and anxiety. Because you think right away, what will the place be like? How will I get on? Will I fit in? Will the natives be friendly? These would be the questions that Naomi asked, only her case was obviously a much more serious one. Life was going to be very different. Now, she has lost her husband, and she's lost two sons. And at this point, we should consider the loss of her children, because they would still be her children. At a funeral, if you watch a mother who has lost her son, the son might be in his 60s. He might be a grandparent himself. But that will make no difference, because while she is looking on, she will remember the wee boy that she brought into the world. She will remember the wee boy who climbed onto her knee when he wanted to hear a story. And although we have come on and we're all very sophisticated nowadays, people haven't changed much. And Naomi would feel the very same as any mother today. By the natural order of things, a parent should go before their child. So how does Naomi cope? She does so with great courage. Now, in the Old Testament, people are often told to remember. And that is exactly what Naomi does. She remembers how much God has done for her people in the past. If we turn to Exodus chapter 14, we read the story of Moses. He leads the Israelites through the Red Sea to freedom. They are no longer slaves. And remembering this, she puts great faith in God and trusts that he will help her and give her the strength to do his will. Naomi also shows great support of daughters-in-law Orpah and Ruth when she tries to send them back to their own families. Now, you can hear her saying, away you go. Get away back home to your own mothers, your own families, your own people. She wants them to go. She wants them to have a life of their own. She wants them to remarry and perhaps have children of their own. Now, how unselfish is that? She is so willing to put their needs before her own. And what a wonderful example that is. It would have been so easy for Naomi to say, well, if I hang on to these two girls, they seem keen to stay, so if I hang on to them, they'll help me and in time they'll look after me. But she doesn't. It's everyone else first and self last. Do we always do that? We can probably remember a situation where we had to decide whose needs came first. I personally can remember Christmas Day of last year vividly. I had been to church. I had then gone and had lunch with someone who was terrified of having Christmas Day totally on her own. I had then popped into one of the nursing homes to see someone who really was not terribly well. And at the end of all that, I thought, home. Have the rest of the day to do what you want to do. And what did I want to do? Well, I wanted to go home and read Matthew and Luke and read the Lord's birth all over again. And then I wanted to sit and listen to carols and just gradually unwind, relax, and listen to all those well-known carols once more. But on entering the flat, the first thing I did, it must be part of my DNA now, I reached for the phone to check had someone phoned. And I thought, don't be silly, it's Christmas Day. Who would phone? Well, there wouldn't be undertakers, that's normally who phones, but there wouldn't be any of them on Christmas Day. Well, when I lifted the phone, I found there was a message. And it wasn't family saying, hope you're having a nice Christmas. It was a lady in distress, a lady from my own church. Her husband had collapsed and was now in the Western Infirmary. Could I come as soon as I got the message? Now, I was tempted to put the phone down and phone her on Boxing Day and say, I didn't bother checking yesterday. It was Christmas Day. I didn't expect a call. But then I thought, what would God want me to do? And I knew at once. So I was halfway down the stairs and into the car in double quick time. And that's exactly how Naomi behaved. She thought, what would God want me to do? And she was very unselfish. She did what she knew was right. Now let's look at Ruth. She too has lost a husband. And for a time, she has lived in a strange land. Ruth has had to adapt to Naomi's way of doing things and to being part of a Jewish family. As a daughter-in-law, she has probably never quite been good enough for Naomi's son. No woman is ever good enough for one's son. Despite the differences, Ruth has become very fond of her mother-in-law and is now very close to her. And with all the differences and difficulties to overcome, why would Ruth feel so attached to Naomi? She clings to Naomi and refuses to leave her. Ruth owes her mother-in-law nothing and has been encouraged to go. I mean, Naomi was making it clear, go back to your own country, to your own people. But still, she says, no. She didn't want to go back and make a life for herself. So why does Ruth want to stay? Well, if you look at verse 16, Ruth says some very important words. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. The most important one, of course, is, and your God will be my God. What does this say to us? It tells us that Ruth has changed completely. She wants to come to God, the one true God, not the God she has prayed to before. So why the change? Well, she has been greatly influenced by Naomi. Ruth has watched her mother-in-law and learned from her. She's learned about courage, loyalty, dedication, and faith. The most important thing Ruth says is, your God will be my God. Can't emphasize that strongly enough. It's the faith that she has picked up from her mother-in-law. This demonstrates more than anything that Naomi has been a wonderful example, and Ruth wants to turn to God because of what she has witnessed. Could we be like Ruth? Do we watch and learn from other people? When we are with people, do we notice evidence of grace in them? Do we ever speak with people and go away feeling that they have taught us something? If so, do we actually learn from them, as Ruth did, or do we just go away and forget about it? Could we be like Ruth, committing and continuing? We are all full of good intentions, and in our hearts we know all the things that we would like to do in the name of the Lord. But will we do them? When things become difficult, will we still see the task through to the end? Could we be like Naomi, suffering and witnessing? It is fairly easy to have a strong faith when everything is fine and there are no problems on the horizon. But could we go and tell others how great God is when times are difficult and we're surrounded by so many problems that we just feel so weak and so helpless? Could we explain to people that God is always at the center of our lives, loving, caring, and guiding, and so bring these people to God? When Christ calls us, he may not ask us to move geographically, although he might, but he will insist that we change our attitudes, lifestyles, level of commitment, and so on. If we are going to learn from Ruth's example, we must be willing to put God at the center of everything we do, not just church work, but even the most ordinary, simple tasks. God must be at the center. If we are unsure of what we are doing, and quite often we are, then there is a simple question to ask. If I do this, will it hurt God? If the answer is yes, don't do it. Just as Ruth showed total commitment to Naomi by staying with her when she could have made a new life for herself, we have to show our commitment to Jesus by putting him first. This can prove quite difficult, as what we want is usually in stark contrast to what Jesus wants. In the Lord's Prayer, we say, "Thy will be done." But do we mean that we wish to do his will? It is relatively easy to say what we would like to do, but it's much more difficult to actually do it. Ruth is an excellent example. She tells Naomi what she plans to do, and then she goes ahead and does it. Naomi was such a wonderful example that she led Ruth to God. Now think how exciting and fulfilling it would be if we were such good examples, if we could show Christ within us and bring people to God. Just imagine someone coming up to you and saying, "I've been listening to what you say. I've been watching all the things you do. And listening to you and watching you, I so much want to come and get to know God. It's so exciting, it just doesn't get much better than that." When we leave here tonight, let us take God to the people and then bring the people back to God.